it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
You're listening to continuing coverage from the trial of Corey Richens from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Please proceed.
Hey. Corey Richens feels aggrieved and is thus an intensely ambitious person. She feels aggrieved because growing up, her father was an alcoholic who traded parenting for prison, and her mother, a gambler who traded parenting for a casino. Corey Richens thus worked for her aunt, cleaning the homes of rich people in Park City. She was not beneath those homeowners, but she felt that she was. This fueled in her an intense desire to appear privileged, affluent, and successful. She met Eric Richens. He was a successful business owner. He had money. They had a son, married, and had two more sons. Corey Richens was on her way. But she was unhappy. She wanted to leave Eric Richens, but did not want to leave his money. Their prenuptial agreement meant that if she left him, she would also leave most of his money. So, Corey Richens took $250,000 in equity out of Eric Richens' home without him knowing it, so that she could start her own business and earn enough money to leave Eric Richens. Corey Richens is intensely ambitious. First with Eric's money and then other people's money, Corey Richens carefully curated the facade of a privileged, affluent, successful business owner. Behind the facade, however, Corey Richens was incompetent. She took tremendous risks. She borrowed money by any means necessary at exorbitant rates. She gambled other people's money and lost. Her business was imploding. All the while, Corey Richens was more interested in spending time with Josh Grossman than Eric. She dreamed of living in the Midway Mansion with Josh, running it as an event center, farming and raising kids, Eric's kids. But she did not have the money to leave Eric or the money to salvage her business. Corey Richens is an intensely ambitious person. She is a risk taker. There was a way forward. Eric had to die. As Judge Mrozek just instructed, there are five counts. And each count has a series of elements. The state has to prove each count and each element of each count beyond a reasonable doubt. That is our burden. In this closing, we will go count by count, and then within each count, element by element, to show to you how the state has met its burden of proving aggravated murder, attempted aggravated murder, two counts of fraud and forgery. That, again, is the reasonable doubt instruction that Judge Mrazek just read, and you will have back with you in the jury room. Judge Mrazek also read this instruction on what evidence is, and it's usually testimony and exhibits. To reiterate, what the attorneys say is not evidence. And as I asked you in opening, please focus on the evidence. Throughout this presentation, I generally use this format for slides. And so everybody understands where we are, the count, and then the element within the count is at the top in the red banner. We then quote some witness testimony and we cite it because it's the evidence that matters. So that you have, you'll have the exhibits back with you when you deliberate. And you can reference them. Usually it's a transcript, page, line, number of the testimony. We also publish exhibits. And usually we'll have an exhibit number down here. If there's an exhibit, whatever, 2-5, so you can reference it. Let's begin with the aggravated murder count. The evidence will prove that Corey Richens was the person who committed the aggravated murder. The evidence will prove that she intentionally or knowingly caused the death of Eric Richens here by means of administering to him the illicit street drugs that she purchased from Carmen Lauber. She intended to kill him with the illicit street drugs. It doesn't matter what illicit street drugs. We'll get into it more. It doesn't matter if it was the propofol, if it was the fentanyl that actually killed him, if it was oxy or some other illicit street drugs. She bought illicit street drugs to kill Eric Richens. That's what matters. That's murder. These two elements are just murder, right? If we hide this, that's a murder charge. Here we have an aggravated murder charge, and the state will prove two separate and distinct aggravators. The first is for pecuniary gain. This is a why aggravator. Why did Corey Richens kill Eric? For money. The second aggravator is a how aggravator. How did she do it? Here, by the administration of any substance, here it happens to be fentanyl, but it could be any substance administered in a lethal amount. Either one of those aggravators are what transforms this case from a murder case to an aggravated murder case. So, first count, first element, was it Corey Richens? Yes. The state has proved that Corey Richens had the means, here the fentanyl, the illicit street drugs, the motive, here money, and a fresh start at life, and the opportunity to kill Eric Richens. She was the only other adult in the home at the time. Nobody else killed Eric Richens. Now, intentionally or knowingly caused the death of Eric Richens by administering the illicit street drugs. The state will prove with all kinds of evidence, testimony, exhibits, patterns of her behavior and what each of us know about humans, that she intended to cause Eric's death. She intended it probably as early as December 7th, 2021, when she booked a trip for her and Josh Grossman to the Caribbean for April. People don't book that trip. Corey Richens did not book that trip thinking Eric Richens would be alive in April. She booked it knowing he would not. In December, before Eric died, before Corey Richens murdered Eric, she told her friend, Becky Lloyd, in many ways it would be better if he were dead. That proves she intended to cause his death. This was the New York Life policy that covered the C&E buy-sell agreement. And on January the 1st, 2022, Corey Richens changed the life insurance beneficiary on Cody's policy from Eric to her. The evidence proves that Corey Richens didn't understand that was Cody's policy. And when she figured it out, she went ahead and changed it back, because she planned to murder Eric. She did not plan to murder Cody. But she planned to murder. Corey Richens asked two people, Hayden Jeffs and Carmen Lauber, for the Michael Jackson drug. Corey Richens was a suburban mother real estate agent. She does not know a lot about the illicit street drug world, but she knows Michael Jackson died from taking drugs. She doesn't know how to order a street drug, but she knows she wants the Michael Jackson stuff. She knows she wants it because it is lethal, it is fatal, it kills. And she wanted lethal, fatal death. Corey Richens is intensely ambitious. She wanted the perfect life, or at least the appearance of the perfect life. And for her, that meant Josh Grossman. But first, Eric had to go away.
So with these transactions, when Carmen hit you up, what did she tell you?
She just told me she had a friend that wanted,
Why did she ask for blue specifically, or fentanyl specifically, or did she ask for oxygen? What did she ask for?
No. I think she might have asked for blue. I can't remember.
But you sold her M30, right?
Yeah, I told her what she knew what she was buying.
Okay, so she wasn't like she's asking for oxy or something like that. She got the M30.
Right, yeah.
Okay. She knew that there was fentanyl in those pills.
At Corey Richens' request, Carmen Lauber purchased illicit street drugs from Robert Crozier. It's those illicit street drugs that killed Eric Richens. It's those illicit street drugs that Corey used to murder Eric Richens. And while there may be some question as to whether she specifically ordered fentanyl or she knew she was getting fentanyl, the evidence proves she at least knew it. She wanted fatal, lethal, illicit street drugs. And all the testimony from Carmen Lauber, Robert Crozier, digital forensics, we'll get into it, all confirm that Corey Richens ordered and received illicit street drugs and that those street drugs contained fentanyl. Illicit street drugs is all that matters. But you heard the testimony that despite confusion in what people were ordering, people were getting fentanyl. The fake M30s looked like the real, the fake M30s looked like the real M30s. Everything on the street in early 2022 had fentanyl. That's how we know that it was this purchase that ended up killing Eric. It's the fentanyl. We can trace the fentanyl. Next slide. The digital forensics corroborate Carmen Lauber's testimony that 5 days before Corey Richens murdered Eric Richens, Carmen Lauber purchased for Corey Richens fentanyl from Robert Crozier at the Maverick in Draper. The call detail records show an extraordinary amount of overlapping communication between Carmen Lauber, Corey Richens, Carmen Lauber, Robert Crozier during that time. We, of course, don't have the communications. Carmen Lauber deleted them because they were evidence of a drug deal. Corey Richens deleted them because they were evidence of a drug deal and a murder. Robert Crozier said he had lost his phone. But that's an extraordinary number of communications. We know that Corey Richens, the evidence proves that Corey Richens used a Moscow mule and a shot to administer the fentanyl to Eric. She writes it in her orange notebook where she journals what happened the night she murdered Eric. It's a self-serving journal. We'll discuss that down the road. But she wrote Moscow Mule and a lemon drop shot. And that is consistent with all the toxicology. Again, in the notes that investigators recovered from the kitchen cabinet in Corey Richens' home, she wrote Moscow Mules. Lemon water, vodka, and rum. She left out the main ingredient, which of course is the ginger beer. But there was ginger beer. We know that from the cock and bull that OMA investigator Cam Sessions found in the trash can in the kitchen. It's interesting that Corey Richens wrote vodka in parentheses rum. The evidence may show that the Moscow meal she made that night was ginger beer and fentanyl. The lemon shot, drop shot, maybe lemon and fentanyl. Notice that here she writes drink in bed. We'll come back to that in a minute. The The cock and bull, as I mentioned, corroborates at least a Moscow mule. And that we know the cause of death from the death certificate was fentanyl. The fentanyl and the illicit street drugs that Corey Richens got from Carmen Lauber, who got from Robert Crozier. We know that Eric ingested the fentanyl from the Moscow Mule, the Lemon Drop Shop, or both. Medical examiner Dr. Pamela Ulmer, toxicologist Brianna Peterson, chief medical examiner Dr. Eric Christensen, all testified that the 20,000 nanograms per milliliter of fentanyl, an extraordinary amount, in his stomach indicates oral ingestion. Indeed, Dr. Christensen not only testified to it, he told Corey Richens that in their phone call that she recorded. Ms. Peterson's testimony, as well as Dr. Christensen, also proves that the fentanyl was illicit. Again, illicit, coming from the street, illegal street drug, illicit fentanyl. And it was their testimony, right, was that there was not only fentanyl in the toxicology, but there was norfentanyl, which was a marker of an illicit fentanyl. There's also acetyl fentanyl as well. But it's the norfentanyl that is a marker of illicit fentanyl, which completely tracks with how Corey Richens got the illicit street drugs. We also know that Corey Richens intended to kill Eric Richens because the toxicology contained quetiapine.
Your Honor, we may have lost the audio.
Let's reset. My apologies.
Caffeine is an antipsychotic medication.
Last one. What is quetiapine?
Quetiapine is an antipsychotic medication. It's called Seroquel.
Okay.
It's a prescription mental health medication. Mm-hmm. That's prescribed for different things.
I gotcha.
The quetiapine in the toxicology for Eric Richens shows that Corey Richens was involved because she was prescribed quetiapine. Now, this conversation that she recorded with Dr. Christensen is also very insightful. She pretends to not know what quetiapine is. It's her prescription. Of course she knows what it is. She pretends to not know what it is to cover up her involvement in putting the quetiapine inside Eric's body. She feigns the ignorance. She covers up her conduct in murdering Eric Richens in several ways throughout, beginning the night she murdered him, all the way through the walk the dog letter. In the orange notebook, She writes, she jumped out of bed, ran, turned on the lights, grabbed her phone, and called 911. The evidence proves that is not true. The evidence proves that when she returned to their bedroom, Corey Richens says she was in Ashton's room. There's no evidence of that. But she returned from somewhere to their bedroom, unlocked her phone, put it on speaker. There's no call detail records showing a call at that time. But she may have called on Wi-Fi, somebody. That would not appear in the call detail records. It would appear on her phone if her phone had not been deleted.
Objection, Your Honor. These are facts that are not.
Please have a seat.
She then unlocked her phone again at 3:08, 3:10, 3:15, 3:19, 3:19. And then 15 minutes later, she called 911. That is not immediately called 911. Perhaps she was staging the scene during these 15 minutes. We're going to discuss the 911 call in a minute. This is a receiver activation. At 3:22:12, when we're in the 911 call, she's on receiver on her phone. The 911 call operator asks her, "Are you on speakerphone?" She says, "Yes." "No." She's on receiver. Before we play this, we're going to listen to the first part, actually most of the 911 call again. I ask that as you listen to it, you'll hear the first minute. The first minute is not the sound of a wife becoming a widow. To echo her friend Chelsea Barney, the first minute is the sound of a wife becoming a black widow. Listen to how Corey Richens on the 911 call immediately presents, very soon after the call begins, presents her alibi narrative. Listen to how she tells the 911 dispatcher where she was when Eric died. She is distancing herself. Rather than, "He's not breathing, he has no pulse, I have to figure out what to do, I need help," she's saying, "Hey, look, I was not there, I was in my son's room." That's her alibi. She's distancing herself from the time and the place that she murdered Eric. The 911 call operator asks her to perform CPR. Notice how she distances herself from that. "No, I don't know how. No, he's too heavy. No, I can't move him." She is not immediately trying to revive him. We're going to run a clock from the time that the dispatcher asks her if she can start CPR to the time she purportedly starts it. It's 6 minutes. Listen, please, to the portion of the 911 call where the operator instructs Corey Richens how to remove Eric from the bed. Listen how the dispatcher says, "Move to the side of the bed." Corey Richens says she does. "Remove the pillows, pull the arm, pull the leg, lift up the sheath, pull him off." if Corey Richens is following the instructions of the 911 dispatcher, Eric Richens' body is on the floor on the side of the bed. Not the foot of the bed where it was found. Listen also to her choice of language. She has dehumanized Eric Richens. When she is talking about removing Eric from the bed and she is protesting and she is saying she cannot, she is not saying, I can't move him. She is saying, I can't move it. Eric is no longer a him to him. She murdered Eric. Eric is an it. Finally, listen to when she says she is performing CPR and the phone is on speaker. The phone's not on speaker. Determine whether she's performing CPR. Okay, Scott.
Yes, I'm not breathing. She's cold.
Okay, what's the address?
282 Willow Court.
28 Willow Court?
Uh-huh.
Okay, what's a good phone number in case we get disconnected?
435-671-4987.
Okay, it's going to be in Francis? Okay, tell me exactly what happened.
I don't know. I was sleeping. I was sleeping with my kids.
Okay, I can't understand you. I need you to take a deep breath. What's going on?
I don't know. I was sleeping in with my kids. I just came in the bed, in our bed, and I turned over. I mean, he's just cold. He's just cold.
Who's cold?
My husband. I turned the light off and...
He's not breathing? He's not breathing?
No.
I need you to confirm it for me. Is he not breathing?
No.
Okay, we're gonna... Can you do CPR?
No. I don't know how.
You don't know? I'm gonna tell you how to. Are you willing to do CPR?
Yeah.
Okay. If there's a defibrillator available, send someone to get it now and tell me when you have it.
No, thank God.
Available? Okay. No. I'm sending the paramedics to help you now. Stay on the line and I'll tell you exactly what to do next, okay? Okay, are you right by your husband right now?
Yes, he's so pale. His mouth is okay. So open.
Okay, listen carefully. Are you able to lay him on the floor or the ground? On the floor, on the ground?
I'm just shaking. I can't touch him. I can't.
You can do it. You can do it. You need to calm down, okay?
He's just yellow.
We need to help him. I can guide you through CPR. Take a deep breath for me. I'm here with you.
He doesn't have a pulse.
He doesn't have a pulse?
No. He's no pulse.
Okay, I'm here with you.
I didn't hear anything. I was just going to do it.
I'm here with you. We need to get him help. If you need to put me on speaker, put me on speaker. I'm gonna guide you through CPR, okay?
Okay.
Tell me what you've done then.
Okay, I'm ready.
You're ready? Okay, he's on the floor?
He's on the bed.
Okay, are you able by any chance to move him on the floor?
Okay.
thoughts on it. I don't know what's happening. I don't know. Okay. I'm here with you. Are you not able to, you're not able to move him to the floor?
Go out. Go out. Go out. Go out. Go out. Don't come in here. Don't come in here. Oh my God, my sister.
You're not able to move him to the floor?
Manuel,
just listen carefully. We just need to get him on the floor. Don't worry about hurting them.
Don't hit the body.
Is he still on the bed?
Yes.
Okay, if there's a sheet or a blanket under them, can you loosen it from the mattress?
Yes.
Okay, stand at the side of the bed closest to them and remove anything under the head.
Okay.
Okay. I need you to pull the sheets towards you and slide them off the bed. Don't worry about him falling. We just need to help him now.
Okay.
Tell me when he's on the floor.
I can't move it. It's a dead weight. Like, it just...
You're not, if he has sheets under, pull them to the floor. Don't worry about hurting him.
Can you please send somebody?
Okay, I have the ambulance that's on the way. Okay, there's another way to do this, okay? Grab their feet. Grab his feet.
Okay.
Slide them towards you. Until they're just off the bed. How old is your husband?
39.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, were you able to pull his feet off the bed?
Instantly.
Okay, now grab the arm closest to you. And pull the rest of the way off the bed. Again, don't worry about the fall. We just need to help them now. I have the ambulance on the way. I just need you to do this, okay, so we can get the help for him.
Okay.
Once they arrive, they'll take over. We just need to start CPR now. You are doing great, okay? I just need you to get him on the floor.
Okay,
you got him on the floor?
Yeah.
Okay, listen carefully, okay? Make sure that there's nothing under his head. Is he laying flat on his back?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, just listen carefully and I'll tell you how to do chest compressions, okay? Place the heel of your hand on the breastbone. This is in the center of the chest, right between the nipples.
Okay.
Put your other hand on top of that hand.
Okay.
Stop pumping the chest hard and fast at least twice per second and 2 inches deep.
Okay.
Start counting out loud so I can count with you, okay? We're going to count 1, 2, 3, 4, okay? Let me know when you're ready. Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4.
One, two, three, four. Count out loud so I can hear you. I'm counting with you. One, one, two, three, four. 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 One. If it's easier for you, am I on speaker?
Yes.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4. Do you know the front door is open?
No, it's locked.
It's locked. Are you? I need you to go. Is there anybody else within the home, or is it just you?
It's all my kids.
Okay. Are one of them old enough to go and lock the door?
Yeah, it's unlocked.
It's unlocked now?
Yeah, he's here. He's there.
Okay.
Nathan. The protesting that was part of the 6-minute delay in Corey Richens performing CPR. I can't move it. It is just dead weight. Contrast that 911 call with her self-serving text message to her best friend, Chelsea Barney. I tried so fucking hard to save him, his lifeless body on my bedroom floor. I pumped so damn hard, so hard, screaming at him to come back to life, that I needed him. None of that happened. She's covering up her involvement in murdering Eric Richens. Recall the alibi narrative at the beginning of the 911 call. Her letting the 911 operator and everyone know that she was not with Eric when he died. I was somewhere else. I was distant in place and time. When she calls her father-in-law, Eric's dad, Gene Richens, what does she say right at the outset? I was sleeping with Asha and I came into the room. Gene, I wasn't there. Wasn't me. When Eric's sister, Katie, arrives, he wasn't breathing. I went to bed. I was in Ashton's room. He was having nightmares. I wasn't there. It was not me. Her alibi. Her cover-up. This is the written form that sheriff's deputies gave Corey Richens early morning of March 4th to write out what happened. It says, describe in detail what you saw, know, or heard of the incident. Where does she start? Eric and I put the kids to bed around 9 p.m. We had a drink. In Corey Richens' mind, that's when the incident started. It was the drink, and she knew it because she put the fentanyl in the drink. She didn't start with, I walked into the bedroom at 3 a.m. My husband was not breathing and cold. Describe the incident. The incident for her begins around 9:15 when she has the drink, because she knows that is in fact when the incident began. And then more of her self-serving alibi narrative. It wasn't me, I wasn't there. Before she gets into really what matters. Intentionally or knowingly caused the death of Eric Richens. We know it was intentional because she planned the immediate reaction. When she spoke with Eric's sister, Katie, very shortly after medical examiners rolled Eric Richens' body out of his home for the last time, she told Katie that she was going to plan the Midway, she was going to follow through with the purchase of the Midway mansion. She was going to sell the home that she was living in. And she had a plan for running Eric's business, CNE. The morning of Eric's death. She had those plans in place because she knew she was going to murder Eric. She had already thought about not only murdering him, but what I'm doing immediately after murdering him. Her plan with the Midway Mansion is consistent with her dream of living there with Josh Grossman running it as an event center, farming and raising Eric's kids. Her plan to sell the home she lived in proves that she had no idea that home was in a trust and she couldn't sell it. Her plan on running Eric Richin's half of C&E shows that she did not understand the buy-sell agreement, the life insurance coverage on the buy-sell agreement, or that that life insurance coverage went to the trust, not her. The morning Eric died, she had a plan on how she was spending Eric's money and didn't realize it was trust money. We know that Corey Richin's intended to kill Eric. The evidence proves that she intended to kill Eric, in part based on her conversation with Josh Grossman shortly after killing Eric. Corey Richin's asked Josh if he had ever killed anybody. Killed was her word. Not have you ever lost a loved one? How do you grieve? Not have you ever walked in and found a dead body unexpectedly? Not how do you respond to a tragic and horrible accident? It is how you have you killed. And then she asked how it made him feel. She asked that because she was working through her own feelings on killing and wanted Josh to help her work through those feelings. And never mind that that's a highly selfish question. She's worried about working through her feelings on killing. Never mind Josh Grossman's feelings on having had to have killed in service of his country. It was her feelings that mattered. Walk the dog letter. There's a lot to unpack in this. But right now, let's unpack the fact that Corey Richin says Eric gets pain pills and fentanyl from Mexico. She goes on to talk and says, Eric finally told me and asked if Carmen could get him some pain pills and fentanyl from Mexico. Some refers back to pain pills in Mexico from fentanyl. Pain pills and fentanyl from Mexico. Corey Richin's knows 4 months after she's been arrested for Eric Richin's murder, a year and a half after she murdered him, she knows that she bought fentanyl. And she has to explain it. And how does she explain it? A year and a half after murdering Eric Richin's, she blames it on Eric. Oh, I bought it for Eric. That's the sum of the evidence. Her self-serving statement asking her brother to testify falsely that she brought it from Eric. For Eric. A year and a half after she murdered. Corey Richin's did not tell the 911 desk dispatcher, hey, I just bought some fentanyl for Eric. She didn't tell the paramedics, he might be dying from the fentanyl I just bought for him. He didn't tell the deputies that responded. He didn't tell Detective Woody. You didn't tell Dr. Ulmer, didn't tell Christensen, didn't tell her friends, didn't tell her family. All the off-ramps she had to, the opportunity to take to say, hey, I bought the fentanyl for Eric. She doesn't, because it did not happen. She did not concoct this story until a year and a half after she killed him. And it is a story. It's a fake story that she wants her brother to testify to. There are, of course, other inaccuracies. Corey Richens in the Orange Notebook writes, self-servingly, when the EMT walked up to me and said he didn't make it, we did all we could, I lost it, I immediately ran to the bathroom. This is the video of when the EMT walked up to her. Stop it there. We could play it for several more minutes. She doesn't immediately or otherwise run to the bathroom and throw up. When people make up stories, they are inconsistent in the retelling. Here, in the Orange Notebook, Corey Richens says they make the Moscow Mule and the lemon drop shot in the kitchen, and then they go to bed and brush their teeth. Here, they drink it in the bedroom, not the kitchen. Corey Richens tells her attorney, it's on the right, she tells her attorney that Eric was on the phone when she went into Ashton's bedroom. But Eric Richens' phone activity tells a different story. Corey Richens repeatedly said that she went into Ashton's bedroom 9:30, 9:45. Eric was off the phone before 9. In the Orange Notebook, Corey Richens says that Eric was awake when she went into Ashton's room. And that rambling phone call with Bryce Knutson that Chelsea Barney recorded, she suggests that he was asleep, because she says when she returned to the bedroom about 3 a.m., Eric was in the exact same position as he was when he fell asleep. That means she was there when he fell asleep, not in Ashton's room. Her story is inconsistent in the details. that proves that much of it is fake. We've read text messages throughout this presentation. We'll continue to publish some more for you to read. None of those text messages were recovered from Corey Richens' phone. They were recovered from Eric's phone, Chelsea Barney's phone, Josh Grossman's phone, but not Corey Richens' phone, because they were deleted. That is part of her cover-up. When comparing the contents of the phone with few to no text messages, with the contents of the call detail records, with thousands of text messages, that's how we know they were deleted. When Detective Woody executed the first of the search warrants on April the 13th, 2022, and she informed Corey Richens that toxicology showed that Eric died of fentanyl poisoning, Detective Woody seized her phone. On her phone that she got to replace the seized phone, on the phone that Corey Richens got to replace the seized phone, these are the searches. What was Corey Richens worried about? She was worried about the police recovering all her deleted text messages. Why? They're inculpatory. They would further prove that Corey Richens bought drugs from Carmen Lauber to then murder Eric Richens. Her phone searches reveal what she was thinking. She's worried about being investigated. She's worried about having to take a lie detector test. She's worried about my office. She's worried about her seized electronics. Prison is on her mind. So is money. She's interested in the life insurance. We don't know precisely when these searches were conducted. It's just not in the digital data. We have the data we have. But we do know that she hasn't been paid out yet on life insurance. And she started getting paid out in June of 2022. And this phone she got in April of 2022. So the inference is that these searches occurred between April and June of 2022. This one's the most insightful. If someone is poisoned, what does it go down on the death certificate as? She didn't search if someone accidentally ODs. She doesn't search if somebody is dead for unknown reasons. She searches if somebody is poisoned, because that is what happened. Now we have to prove that Corey Richens intended to murder Eric Richens, which means we have to prove that Eric Richens did not commit suicide. Corey herself says he didn't. No mental health concerns. But the other evidence proves it as well. Eric had every reason to live, the first three of which are Carter, Ashton, and Weston. He was a phenomenal father. He protected his boys. He put his money in trust mostly for the benefit of them, to protect them. He was a protector. He's not leaving his boys. He was also planning for the future. He was a successful business person, and he and Cody had future business plans. He had future plans with his sister. They were planning family vacation to Disneyland. He was planning on buying a cabin in the Uintas with his father for the family. Every shred of evidence in this case proves that Eric did not commit suicide. This wasn't an accidental overdose. Eric Richens did not use drugs. He did not use illicit drugs. Set aside THC gummies. Corey Richens said no, never, to Deputy Wynn and paramedic Offred. These are people that it would have made sense to tell he used illicit drugs to in the moment as paramedic Offred's trying to save Eric's life. But no, she was honest. Nope, never. Same thing with Dr. Ulmer as they're reviewing the toxicology and trying to explain the fentanyl, right? Dr. Ulmer's like, well, there's this fentanyl, really can't explain it. Did he do illicit drug? No, never. Grossman, she's honest with anybody, she's honest with Grossman. No, Eric did not use drugs. Her best friend, another person she's honest with, nope. Life insurance company, no. Chief medical examiner, no. In every bit of evidence that came into this case, everyone who testified and knew Eric well, his friends, his family, no, Eric didn't use illicit drugs. Not even prescription drugs. Your Honor, this might be a good place to take a break.
Let's do it. Folks, one moment, just a friendly reminder. Don't talk about the case. Don't allow anybody to talk to you about it. Do not do anything with your devices during this break related to this case at all. We'll return at 10:20. Please rise for the jury.
More continuous coverage from the trial of Corey Richens from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games as all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play. Only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games as all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.